Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. When I asked my good buddy John Galloway, who knows more about Azure than just about anybody I know, who to talk with about Azure mobile apps, the name Chris Reisner popped out. Chris is a principal software development engineer at Microsoft, and he works within the developer experience team, where he leads a team focusing on making non-traditional Microsoft technology work well with Microsoft technology. Chris spends a long time doing .NET development before he switched over to native Android and iOS, and now he combines those diverse passions into making different ecosystems work together. Chris, how are you?
Jesse, I'm doing well. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I'm very eager to talk with you about Azure mobile apps and about all of the services related to it. Is that a good place for us to start?
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe it might be good to take one little step back and talk about kind of what we're trying to accomplish with Azure mobile apps. And there's a term that gets thrown around a lot, especially when it comes to the cloud. It's, you know, as a service. You've got infrastructure as a service, you've got platform as a service, you've got software as a service. Well, what we're trying to do with Azure mobile apps is what's considered backend as a service. And the idea is that if you are a mobile developer and you want to build out a mobile application, at the end of the day, you know, the capabilities of your backend are important, but as a user, I don't really care, you know, necessarily what that backend is or what you're building on top of or anything like that. I want to have the best experience I can inside the application. So as a mobile app developer, you want to spend as much time as you can making a really good application. And while, you know, if you have the skill set or you have someone that does, you could build out your own back end. A lot of times it can be much, much faster, even if you do have those skills, to deploy or make use of something like a back end as a service, which is what Azure Mobile Apps is. And Azure Mobile Apps is one piece of what's called Azure App Service. And that's kind of a container of different features or capabilities that run on top of the Azure App Service platform. So you may have heard of web apps, which is a way of hosting web applications, whether it's ASP.NET or Node or Python or PHP. Well, Azure Mobile Apps is kind of like a layer on top of that, where there is currently an SDK for .NET and for Node, which gives you some common capabilities you would want out of a mobile application backend, kind of pre-built for you so that you can use those without worrying about having to build them out, test them, make sure they work yourself. So when I talk about stuff like that at a very high level, the three kind of really important features you get out of mobile apps is an easy way to do data storage. And depending on whether you choose to do something in .NET or in Node, it's a little bit different. I'll dive into that in a second, but I want to cover high level first. The second thing is authentication, authorization. So easy way to authenticate your users, restrict access to data, that sort of thing. And then push notifications. Push notifications are big for pretty much every mobile application. You may not even want to be storing data in the cloud, but chances are good you're going to have some sort of a push notification system. So if we step back for a second, when you create an Azure mobile app, what you're basically doing is you're creating essentially a website, and then you're hosting either a .NET or a Node.js backend there. Now, the Node.js backend is interesting because it provides with some features called Easy Tables and Easy API. And what that enables you to do is essentially without having to code on the desktop or on your own platform anywhere, you can A, set up backend tables and then set up logic around those tables, all from the browser, all inside the Azure portal. And a really, really nice experience using the Visual Studio Online editor, which was previously called Monaco. In addition to that, there's also APIs you can create. So it's not just, you know, things tied to specific tables in a database. You can also just create logical endpoints that you can call from your client application. Now, on the client side, just like there's the server SDK you build out your backend with, there are client SDKs for iOS and Android, you know, native as well as Xamarin, for UWP, for JavaScript if you're doing something like PhoneGap. So, you know, anything you want to build on the client side is pretty much supported, and then the backend, again, is that Node or .NET. If you switch over to the .NET backend, things are a little bit different because you actually get a Visual Studio solution where you're doing a little more required coding, but you kind of have easier access to kind of the whole, like, everything. So for example, if you're going the Easy Tables route, it doesn't really support doing data relationships, so that, you know, that one-to-one or one-to-many thing very, you know, very well. You can handle it, but it's a lot of work. Whereas if you do the .NET backend, well, that, you know, it uses Entity Framework and code first, and the whole relationship stuff is just kind of common practice when it comes to .NET and Entity Framework. So there's some subtle differences there, you know, and it plays into what your coding skills are good at.
Let me interrupt you for one second.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that if you use Azure mobile apps, you have the option with Easy Tables to automatically have offline caching in SQLite. and that some combination of Azure mobile apps, and actually I think it's all in Azure mobile apps, will take care of keeping the two databases in sync and do all of the hard, heavy lifting of creating the tables and dealing with offline, and then when you go online, synchronizing it. First of all, am I right about all of that?
Absolutely, and it's a great thing to bring up. So on top of just that data storage aspect you get, the client SDKs, and the bulk of the work there is the client SDKs. The client SDKs are built so that if you want to do offline data storage, it's essentially built so that that's kind of the default, is that you have offline data storage. And so on the client side, the SDKs have handled dealing with, you know, how do I wrap the SQLite database that it's using on each platform? How do I store the data locally and then push it up to the server? And then also, what do I do if I have a conflict? Now, on the server side, it implements something called optimistic concurrency, where it's basically the first write wins. So on the server side, if you've got multiple devices dealing with the same data, the server is going to detect if the data a client device is out of sync when it tries to save data, and it's going to say, hey, there's a conflict here, back to the client. Then you can obviously handle, you know, that on the client side, whether you want to say, hey, go to the specs of the server and overwrite that data, or, you know, take the server changes and make the user rechange them. You can also do that on the server side, but that works across the board for all the client systems, and then it works on both the Node.js server side and the .NET server side.
Talk for a minute about optimistic concurrency.
The way it works with optimistic concurrency is, let's say you've got two different applications and they're both dealing with the same row in the database, right?
Yes.
So the database has a few columns by default, whether you're doing the .NET or the Node.js backend, and it's a soft delete column, a version column, and I think a updated date column, as well as an ID. And essentially what happens is, if you pull the data down for that row on both devices, let's say they both have version one of that data. If device A makes a change to that data and saves to the database, well, the database now has version two, right?
I'm with you.
Okay. And let's say device B then says, hey, I'm going to make a change. And without ever syncing with the server, it makes a change and tries to push that up. Well, it's going to say to the server, hey, here's version two. The server is going to say, I already have a version two. You're out of date. Here's a conflict. What do you want to do about it? So basically, the first device that writes to the database is the winner, because it's the one that's been changing the data, first. So the second device is, you know, came later and doesn't know that there was a change to the data.
Yes, that makes sense. Where I was going with taking you to Azure Mobile Apps so quickly is that you were talking about using Entity Framework for a relational database. And Azure Mobile Apps is going to try to synchronize with my SQLite, which doesn't support relations. So how does that get resolved?
Right, and that's a little more complex, and that gets into actually having to deal with some thoughts about how that system works, because, as you said, you know, you can demand those relationships exist on the Entity Framework side. You're kind of, as you as the application developer, it's kind of on you to make sure that you have those relationships in your actual code base for the client side.
Got it. So the easiest thing to do to get started is to go to Azure Mobile Apps and Easy Tables, and that will be a relatively flat database that will synchronize with my client-side code.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to overstate how simple it is to get started with those Easy Tables, because, you know, after you spin up your Azure Mobile App, it's, you know, a few clicks to have backend tables created with the APIs wrapped around them where they can do offline data storage. And then from the client side, no matter what client you're using, you don't have to build an SDK around each table or figure out how to talk to REST APIs. The SDK is already there to talk to all of your table endpoints.
There's a great blog post, and I'll put a link to it, from James Montemagno about using Azure Mobile Apps with Easy Tables and Xamarin. And he talks about building out a system in 15 minutes, which is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, there's actually, so one of James's coworkers, Pierce Bogan, and I think another coworker, I think it's Mike James, they looked at what you could do with Xamarin and Azure Mobile Apps, and they said, you know what, it takes maybe 80 lines of code to basically go from localized application to having offline data sync, you know, via the Azure Mobile Apps SDK connected to a backend. And they said, you know what, 80 lines is just too much code. So they actually created a helper library. I'll have to get you the link. I think they may have actually just named it Azure Mobile Helpers. I'm not entirely sure, so I'll have to get you the link. But essentially, they set it up so that it wraps even more of that functionality of setting up the local data store and the data context and that stuff. So you're down to maybe a few lines of code to set up that basic stuff. So it's really quite powerful and quite easy, no matter how you're building out these applications.
Fantastic. One of the things that I really want to do all the time, as you suggested, is to get push notification working. Can you tell me a little bit about how Azure Mobile Apps will help you get that done?
Yeah, so it's funny. When I talk about push notifications and Azure Mobile Apps and Azure, one of the first questions I usually ask if I'm talking to a group is, who's ever implemented their own system in the back end to talk to push notification services? So talk to APNS and Google Cloud Messaging and Windows Notification Service. And inevitably, you know, a few people raise their hands, and then I ask who had fun doing it, and no one raises their hands. And the reason for that is dealing with all those push notification services is very, very difficult. They all have different formats they expect data in. They have different formats for how you sign the data. You know, APNS requires you to use your certificate that you get from their developer portal, whereas GCM and WNS just give you a key that you use. So there's a lot of complexities there involved in dealing with push notification systems. So Azure Mobile Apps makes use of another feature of Azure called Notification Hubs, which is, it's more or less transparent, because if you create an Azure Mobile App, it's in there. As you know, you go to the push notification settings for your mobile app, and it's kind of right there. So you don't have to kind of go find something else. It's already part of mobile apps. And essentially what you end up doing is you create a notification hub, and then you give it your certificate for APNS or your keys for GCM and WNS. And then that enables your server side to send push notifications through those providers. On the client side, again, as part of those SDKs, we have the ability to register with your notification hub as part of your mobile app. So for a client platform, what you would do is, depending on what you're building, you'd say, go get my token or my key or my ID from the push notification service. So you're still going to WNS if you're building a UWP app. You're still going to APNS if you're building an iOS app, etc. They give you back an identifier. You can then hand that identifier to your mobile app, and then your mobile app can push through that push notification service down to your application. And that sounds like a fairly complicated workflow, but once you get down to the basic pieces of just getting a token, giving it to your backend, and then your backend saying, I would like to deliver a push notification to this token, it's much, much, much simpler than if you had to try to figure out that stuff yourself, or even if you were to try to deploy an open source kind of push notification system for yourself.
And is there a good write-up, a good blog post, or someplace people can go to find out step-by-step how to do this?
Yeah, so the Azure blogs, actually, the Azure.com has a really great walkthrough of exactly how to set up push notifications, whichever platform you're building for client-wise, and then how to basically get the information you need for whichever push notification service you need. And the setup is honestly way more complicated than actually using the stuff, because you have to deal with, you have to deal with Apple, or you have to deal with Google, and then you have to get that information to the back end. Once you actually have the setup done, it's really quite simple to get those push notifications out.
Great. And the third part that you mentioned was authorization.
Yeah, so this is really important. And if you remember a little ways back, we had a feature called Azure Mobile Services. And Azure Mobile Apps is, if you would, almost like the second version of that. And when you did Azure Mobile Services, one of the things that you had as part of it was, whenever you created a mobile service, it created a key, like an alphanumeric string that you could send to your backend with every request. And one of the authorization options you had on all of your table operations and all of your custom API operations requires this key. The thing was is that essentially isn't very secure, because you never want to embed any sort of keys into your client application. So now with Azure Mobile Apps, doing this key approach isn't really an option, because it's a bad idea and we didn't want to encourage developers to use it. So when it comes to authorizing your operations on your backend, you have three options. You can say either everyone can access it, so as long as you know the endpoint, you can make calls to it. Only authorized users can, and then nobody can if you just don't want to open it up externally. Now, the interesting one there is obviously authorized users. And what you get with Azure Mobile Apps is an easy way to do authentication against things like Facebook, Twitter, Microsoft, and Google, as well as the ability to expand upon that with things like Azure Active Directory, as well as Azure Active Directory business to client, or business to consumer, rather. And so to focus kind of on those first four options, though, This is the same thing you do if you authenticate with Facebook or Twitter to gain access to, you know, to sign into any application out there. So what you would basically do is you would connect your application, your mobile application, to their developer portal. So for example, you go to the Twitter developer portal and you say, I want to create a new app in your system. You give it the URL of your mobile application and they give you back a key and a secret. And then you put that information in your mobile app. And then on the client side, again, inside those SDKs are really easy methods to say, require the user to go authenticate with Facebook or Twitter, etc. That'll pop open a web view inside the application you're building where they do the OAuth against whatever the provider, so Twitter, and then that information then goes back to your mobile application, so then it creates a valid user identity for your user on your device. And then so once you've done that, your user will then come across with every request to your back end as an authenticated user. And what's great about that then is that in the back end where you can do that logic, whether you're doing .NET or you're doing Node, you can use that user information to save data tied to a specific user, restrict what data users can access. So if you want to say, you know, Jesse can only access Jesse's data, that becomes an option there. So you can really easily add in that authentication and then really have a fine-tooth control over how you authorize access to the data.
That's great. At the beginning of this, I mentioned John Galloway, and he and I, a couple years ago, did a thing called Full Stack, where we tried to build out an application, and I remember him banging his head against the wall to get OAuth to work, and now it sounds like it's a number of lines of code and you're done.
Yeah, it's... You know, having built out some of the OAuth flows in the past myself, where you have to basically show a web view and then, you know, listen for the JavaScript event to happen when the web view calls back into your application and, you know, pull that information out, that whole mess, it's not fun to deal with. And so if you can give me an SDK that says with one line of code, I can say, go authenticate against this provider. And then when I'm back, if I'm authenticated, let me go on my way. Like that alone is a very powerful feature.
And all of this falls under Azure Mobile Apps?
Exactly right. So basically, when you create a mobile application, you've got a bunch of different options in there for things you can do. And so the easy tables are right in there. The authentication is right in there. The push notifications is right in there. And if you're doing the .NET backend, because there are some subtle differences between the .NET and the Node.js, you don't get that easy tables. But again, you're doing the code side of things in Visual Studio. But it's really all in the portal there.
Now, you had mentioned Azure App Services. Am I right that part of that is Azure Mobile Apps and then the rest of it is non-mobile, things like web and so forth?
Yeah, and it's interesting because so Azure App Service is kind of this blanket thing for a few different things that the most well-known ones are Azure Mobile Apps and Azure Web Apps. And the idea being that you can create an Azure App Service environment where you can host many different Azure apps, like so app services or web apps, mobile apps, etc., as you want. So let's say you're developing right now and you want to have a VM and you want to have that VM running multiple different Azure App Service applications, you can do that inside a single App Service environment and it'll scale that App Service environment for all of the applications running inside of it. And so you could have multiple mobile apps, you could have multiple web apps, you could spread them out so you only have maybe one mobile app or one web app per service. It's kind of up to you to decide how you want to architect your solution and, you know, how much usage you're going to want to get. So if you have something that's a low usage web app and a low usage mobile app, you might want to combine them into one single app, Azure App Service environment, as opposed to having different environments for each one.
Okay, great. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other services for mobile development. And I had asked you for some notes, and I'm just going to cheat right off of them. You started with notification hubs.
Yep. So notification hubs, again, so this is something you do get kind of out of the box if you create a mobile application, but you don't need to be using mobile apps or really any other service in Azure if you just want something to help you with push notifications. As I mentioned before, dealing with push notification services like APNS and WNS and GCM, it's pretty complicated. I mean, one thing alone is that, you know, the data formats is very different. So APNS, they want JSON data, but they want it in a specific format, which is different from the JSON data that GCM wants it in. Whereas WNS on the other side wants XML. And so it's a very different format. And so if you wanted to say, let's say I'm a user, I've got username Chris, and I've got a Android phone and an iPhone tablet, and I've got a Windows desktop, and I want to send a push notification to all of Chris's devices. Well, if you're building out this thing yourself, well, you might loop through things and say, oh, well, I need to go through each of Chris's devices. And if it's an Android, send it in this format. If it's an iPhone, send it in this format. If it's a Windows device, send it in that format. Notification Hubs combines a bunch of great features to make some of this stuff easier. So one of the first things you get notification hubs, and again, this is regardless of if you're using mobile apps or not, is you can tag registration. So when I say to my notification hub, hey, this is the token that identifies this device and my application, you can also say tie that to specific tags. And so a tag might be my username, so, you know, Chris, or it might be my zip code or where I live, or it might be a device type or anything else I might want to tie to, like maybe it's a sports team, for example. Then on the back end, what you're able to do is you can push to specific tags. So I could say push to anything registered with the Chris tag. And so then it would say, all right, well, I'm going to push to all of Chris's devices. Now, the second piece of that, though, is the how do you handle different device types or different operating system platforms and push notification services. So the other great feature that I love about notification hubs is templates. And what you can do is you can say, when you register with notification hub, you can say, this is the format I expect the data in. So I expect the data in this this JSON format because it's for APNS, or this JSON format because it's for an Android device, or this XML format, etc. And so in the back end, when you tell your notification hub you want to deliver a push notification, it, when it pulls out those registrations, if there's a template attached, it will then put the data in the specific format for that template. So in one line, you could say, send this data to username Chris. Notification Hub will deal with putting it in the right format for my Android phone, and the right format for my iPad, and the right format for my Windows desktop, without me having to every time say, this is the format for iOS, this is the format for Android, etc. So really powerful, and make it really easy to handle those push notifications on the back end. And then, of course, just like anything else in the cloud, Notification Hub scales up. So if you need to deliver millions of push notifications, it's not just going to put these in a for loop and go one at a time. It's going to scale out and do this in parallel.
Now, help me differentiate if I want to use Azure mobile apps, and you're talking about notification hubs, where is the breakpoint where I need to start using notification hubs?
That's the great thing. So when you create a mobile app and you go to push notifications, it's creating a notification hub for you. It's just putting the settings to configure your notification hub inside your mobile app to make it a little bit easier for you. But it is still a wholly configurable notification hub. So they're really, thankfully, there is no border between, hey, mobile apps can handle this sort of push, but if you need to do more, you need to change to a notification hub. That notification hub is there, so you can connect directly to it from whatever system you want, you know, to kind of further use it, so to speak.
Great. And you mentioned tags. Can individual devices or users be tagged in multiple ways?
Yeah. So a good example of that is, let's say I want to tag everyone's username and then their zip code and then maybe a sports team. Well, that gives me the ability to push off of specific usernames, users in specific zip codes, and then maybe, you know, users who like different sports teams. And you can get fairly complex in how you actually trigger push notifications, which means that you can actually do logical expressions for when you want to trigger push to, say, a specific tag. So let's say I wanted to trigger a push notification to all of the people in a specific zip code that are a fan of a specific team. Using tag expressions, you can do that by basically saying, you know, zip code equals X and team equals Y when you say notification hub, send a push to this tag.
That's great. That's very powerful. And yes. And it sounds like it's fairly manageable to do for Xamarin developers who are not necessarily Azure experts.
That's true. And one thing to keep in mind when it comes to notification hubs is that, and push notifications in general, is that you don't always want to trust the client for information. So what I mean by that is, if it's something the client or somebody could potentially reverse engineer your code and then alter, there's a risk there. So for the example of the username push notification, right? If on the back end, I want to send a push notification to all of Chris's devices, well, I know Chris doesn't want someone else to get his push notifications. So if on the client side, I'm specifying what tags I want to register with, I could foreseeably get out the code for an application. It's relatively trivial to do that. And I could manually insert tags into that code. And therefore, I could register for tags that maybe I shouldn't be. So it's always a good idea to try to do stuff like that on the server side. So instead of specifying on the client side, I want to get registered with these tags. What you probably want to do instead is have an endpoint in your mobile app that, you know, is a register endpoint where you can basically verify the tags that a device should be registered for before you go to that notification hub. And what I'm trying to say, though, is that in addition to, hey, think about the security of that sort of thing, you can also modify your registrations from the back end, not just from the client side.
Got it. Which gives you a more secure notification so that you're not getting my notifications if someone hacks my phone.
Exactly right.
All right. Let's, before we go on to some other mobile related topics, I have a question about using Azure's VMs. Xamarin has a number of cycles. And in those cycles, they have alpha and beta products, and they also have pre-release products. And if I want to play with those within a safe environment, can I fairly easily set up a virtual machine, get my development environment in there, set to whichever level I want, and then do some experimentation and then scrub that machine? Is that a realistic scenario?
So partially, yes. So with virtual machines in Azure, there actually is a virtual machine type for Visual Studio. So it's pretty easy to deploy a Visual Studio virtual machine. I don't know if Xamarin is installed by default on top of that Visual Studio installation. So that might be something you have to add on top of that. But there's nothing separate from that. When it comes to Xamarin, if you wanted to do Xamarin Studio, it's a little more complicated because you'd have to deploy a Linux VM and then figure out how to remote into that if you wanted to do that. But you know, there's nothing to stop you from doing that and, you know, putting that version of Xamarin on a pre-release cycle. The next thing is just getting the compiled application onto devices or running simulators or emulators. There are no currently any Macs in Azure's cloud, so you'd have to connect something to, for example, Mac on the cloud, or even a local Mac running, Xamarin to basically build your iOS apps. Android, I believe you'd be able to run the Android emulator on a virtual machine. I haven't tested that, but I believe that would work since you can run it in Hyper-V.
It would crawl.
I think. Well, I mean, they've done there's a few different emulator options, and mm-hmm. some of them are actually getting quite good. So the emulator for Android built in Visual Studio is actually very, very speedy and quite well. I don't know how it would necessarily perform on an Azure VM, but I want to say that given the different, tiers of virtual machine, there's certainly a virtual machine that would run the Android emulator quite quickly. I just don't know what level you need to be at to have a good experience. That'd be something that would be worth testing just to kind of understand what the scenario would look like. And then the Windows desktop, if you were doing, I guess that you'd be doing UWP apps at that point in time. That's kind of different from your question about Xamarin, though.
Let's return to talking about mobile more directly. What's the status right now about Hockey App?
Oh, great question. Hockey App is a service I love. So, Hockey App is a service that, if you're not familiar with it, it enables you to easily do beta testing for your Android, your iOS, as well as your Windows applications. And by that, I mean, distribute those applications to beta users, and then get feedback on those applications, and not just from the users, but also kind of usage information, so statistics, as well as crash report information, all that stuff that's super helpful as you're testing out an application. And that works actually, the crash reporting and the usage, the metrics, that actually works once you go to production as well. That's not just a beta feature. So Hockey App has actually gotten a lot more support over the past year or so as far as connectivity into kind of Azure applications, or really more realistically, connectivity into Visual Studio Team services. And so essentially with Hockey App, what you could do if you wanted to is you can build out your client application, and you could take the APK if you're in an Android application, the AppX or the IPA. You can go to Hockey App and say, hey, here's my app file. I want to distribute it to these users. And that would work. That works out great. And you can get back all the information I mentioned via your application. And then every time you have a new version, you can just go there and take the new version of that file and just drop it and say, hey, I've got a new version. One of the really great things, though, about Azure and Microsoft's ecosystem in general, though, is that we're trying to make it really easy to connect the pieces together. So if you were building your application locally, let's say you've got a continuous integration server, you can connect that to Hockey App to basically say, hey, whenever I have a new version, send it up to Hockey App automatically. What you could also do, though, is if you don't have your own CI system set up, is we have a service called Visual Studio Team Services that offers a bunch of different capabilities, one of which is it functions as a source control repository. The second one that's super powerful is it acts as a build and continuous integration mechanism. So you can check your code into VSTS and then have a build triggered, either on a nightly basis, maybe whenever you check code in, whatever you want, that will build out your application, and then you can automate sending that compiled application over to Hockey App. So what's really cool is you could say whenever someone checks their code in, do a build and then send the latest version to, this group of testers. And then when you're ready to, you can promote it to the beta group. And then when you're ready to, maybe the staging group, etc. What's really cool about, as I mentioned before, is we want to try to connect a lot of different things and not just Microsoft technology. So earlier when I mentioned if you have your own local CI server, a lot of people use Jenkins on premises or, to build out their own applications. Well, there's Jenkins plugins that go directly to Hockey App. if you're not using VSTS as a source control repository, but you still want that build engine, and you still want that build engine to then connect to Hockey App, you can actually connect a VSTS build to a lot of different systems, such as GitHub, for example. So whenever you check code into GitHub, it'll trigger a build as well. So you have a lot of different options to basically plug things in. And if you kind of think about things, there's this if you look at kind of the flow of continuous integration and continuous deployment, that first step is, you know, that source control repository. That second step is the CI server, and both of those Visual Studio Team Services does. And then that third step is really that beta testing or that, you know, early user testing. And that's really what Hockey App does well. And then later on, when you want to do user, you know, metrics for your actual application, Hockey App does that as well, still as well. And then most recently, one of the things that was just announced within the past couple weeks is there's another service inside Azure called Application Insights. And it's meant as a metric-driven system for applications. So, track the usage of your web applications, etc. Most of the usage tracking for mobile applications is moving into Hockey App, so it won't be in App Insights. However, what you can do now is you can use a bridge application to take your data from Hockey App and put it into Application Insights. And that gives you a really rich ability to query those metrics and understand them. So a little bit more than just kind of what you get out of the Hockey App interface right now.
The logical build on all of that is to Xamarin Test Cloud. And before we talk briefly about what that is, we can start with the fact that Xamarin Test Cloud is not free. How much of what you've mentioned so far is free other than the cost of running on Azure itself?
Great question. And so the first thing I'll highlight is that there is a free tier for Azure Mobile Apps. And then typically behind the scenes of Azure Mobile Apps, you'd have a SQL database. That's not actually a hard requirement because you can develop against other data stores, but typically it's going to be SQL. There's a free tier of SQL that you can use when you create an Azure mobile app. There's a free tier of notification hubs. So that whole aspect, there is a free aspect to it. It's obviously, it's not infinite. It's not unlimited. There are limits in place, and then you'd pay after that. When it comes to VSTS, again, there's a free tier of the build server. So you get a certain amount of minutes of build for free. As far as the source control repository aspect of it goes, for small teams, so I think it's up to 5 people, you basically have unlimited GitHub or Team Foundation version control repositories, which is super great. I use that for version control on pretty much everything I do. So I mentioned there's a limited number of build minutes per month. And then Hockey App, again, there's a free tier there. I think there's some number of, I think it's maybe 2 applications per account are free. So, and I don't think there's any limitations in there. You don't get like limited visualization of the, you know, the crash report data and that. It's just you get 2 free applications.
Brilliant. All of that sounds great and a great way to start. Then that brings us to Xamarin Test Cloud, and I don't want to talk extensively about that, but Xamarin Test Cloud is for UI testing.
How does the pricing on that work today?
So I think they changed the billing model to be more of a usage base. So instead of just a blanket fee, it's a how much is your organization, how much testing is your organization doing? And I would step back and say, you're absolutely right. Xamarin Test Cloud is about UI testing. But one thing that I think is important to highlight because of the name is that your application absolutely does not have to be Xamarin. You can use this to run tests on natively built applications. You can use it to run tests built with something like PhoneGap, as well as you can use it to run tests on applications built in Xamarin. And currently you have 2 different options for designing those UI tests. You can build them in .NET, or you can build them in, the other option is to build them in Ruby. Now I find it easier to do in .NET because I'm a .NET developer, but if you're not a .NET developer, but you also don't want to go down the Ruby path, one thing that's really, really awesome is they have a tool called the Xamarin Test Recorder. And essentially what you can do is you can run this test recorder and launch your application, and then you can record activities inside your application. So say, you know, tap on this text box, type in this, you know, hit that button. As you do that inside the, whether it's a simulator or on a device plugged in, you're recording those applications into the test recorder. And then what you get out of that is you can basically take the output of that, which is C# code, and put it into a XUnit test project and then submit that to Test Cloud. And so that kind of takes away some of the necessity to have a really good understanding of .NET to build out some of these UI tests.
Okay, that was a brilliant overview of all of these pieces. Let's dive one level deeper. If I'm a developer and I'm now ready to begin this process, is my starting point Azure Mobile Apps, and how do I get there? How do I get rolling with this?
Right. So the easiest thing to do is, the first step obviously is to get access to Azure. And if you don't have a subscription already, you can sign up for a free trial. It's really easy. It's just a few minutes to get through. If you are an MSDN subscriber, you already should have some sort of Azure benefits. I think don't quote me, we have to check, but I think there might actually be some Azure benefits inside of the Dev Essentials thing, which is, if you're an indie developer, is a great thing because you get a lot of free software anyway, very easily. But so once you have your Azure account, or your subscription rather, the next step is to go in and create a new Azure mobile app. And this is, a few clicks, a little bit of typing. You name your mobile app, you name the app service environment, you choose what region you want to run in. You know, do you want it in West US where I'm at? Do you want it in, one of the new ones in the UK? Do you need it in Australia, et cetera? Choose where you want that at. And then from there, what I would recommend doing if you're just getting started is there's some really handy guides on Azure.com that we can point to that basically take you through the whole process of, here's how you get your basic application that's just doing some data storage. Here's how you do the offline data sync. Here's how you add the authentication. Here's how you add push notifications. So it'll walk you through each of those steps. And then after that, you can get into some of the more interesting concepts like doing custom APIs or setting up backend jobs or, any of the other things like, site slots where you can have different versions. So like staging production, traffic manager where you can route to different versions. Like there's all these other features on top of it that don't necessarily have to do with the core capabilities of your Azure mobile app.
And what would you say the learning curve is like in terms of time? How long does it take to get to the point where you feel comfortable with the basics and then with these more advanced concepts?
Getting started with the basics is really quite easy because what you'll learn when you go through it is that the client-side SDK where you'll end up doing, you end up doing most of your work on the client side, which is the whole idea of the backend as a service. The client-side SDK makes everything really, really easy for you. And especially if you get started with easy tables, it's really, quite easy to get those tables deployed and then start doing some simple logic there. So the learning curve for all the small stuff is quite small. It's really more so just understanding and kind of, putting in a little bit of time to research all of the other features that are part of Azure and part of Azure App Service. Because it can be pretty easy to go in and say, all right, well, I've got my data storage and I'm authenticating and not even think about some of the other capabilities that you get with Azure App Service.